Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens. Go get it.
Play ball.
From Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona, this is D-Backs Podcast, the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and welcome. Welcome back. It's episode 26. A lot to cover on this program since we last came to you the day after the regular season ended. So we have a lot to discuss. We've already seen some significant personnel changes here in Arizona, and we will discuss those and many other things. I'm Steve Berthume, joined as always on D-Backs Podcast by the star of the show. He is the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham. It's the Diamondbacks play-by-play voice since the very first day, always at the top of his game. It's the Gubna, Greg Schulte.
Da-da-da-da. Glad to be here. Glad to be here. Talk baseball.
Good to be back. Haven't seen you guys in it's been, well, about 2 months.
You know what? I don't know
about
you guys.
For me and you, but
yeah.
That's
we
okay.
haven't introed Leo.
I got a whole separate thing ready for him.
Yeah. But you know, the amazing thing is I think it's been a quick 2 months. Well, when you, a lot of times it'll, you know, take its time, and but it's been a couple of quick months here.
Already a lot's been happening.
December. Yeah.
As the governor hinted at, also on the program.
Well, Leo already talked, too.
Yeah, he screwed up the whole thing.
Yeah, but I'm keeping quiet now until after the intro.
That's your strength. The man who makes it all happen, the guy behind the guy, he is the mother of dragons, the Kingslayer, our producer, our engineer, our man about town, the man who at the Suns Golden State game last week that my wife Cindy and I attended, Gub, not only had better seats than we did.
He deserves them.
But he had his very own table. Looked like a couple of Suns dancers were up there with him.
Nice.
It's Leo, Bad News Gilmartin. Your seats were impressive.
Way to start the season off with inaccuracies all around.
Well, you had your own. Cindy and I were down there.
Your seats were better.
Well, I had to pay for them on the interweb. They cost $1 million because there was Golden State was in town.
Your seats were better.
But you were up there on a table.
And there were no Suns dancers.
He was on a table?
There.
Yes, he had his own table.
Better than being under the table.
But when you're the son, of a basketball Hall of Famer,
Leo on a table.
But you know, but I'm on the aisle. Cindy and I are on the aisle, which means you have to get up every 5 minutes for somebody.
That's better than being in the aisle.
Good point. That's how we usually end up most nights. But Leo was up there with his dad, the Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And he had his own tables all spread out. He had a buffet in front of him.
Before you know it, Leo's going to be in the Ring of Honor.
And Cindy was like, how come Leo didn't invite us up there? I said, I don't know. It's a good question.
He didn't want to be seen with you.
Well I don't blame him.
Did she see who she was sitting next to?
Fair point.
I got one quick question, point of order. Is this episode 26 or episode 1, season 2? What are we?
Oh, okay. So we've been renewed for another year.
Episode 1, season 2. So it's S2E1.
All right. So I will change that from episode 26. I like to keep it running total so we know. Because when we have our 50th and 100th anniversary shows,
so it'd be S2,
episode 26.
E1, T26 total.
All right. That's how we will designate the history of this fine broadcast. As we tape this edition of D-Backs Podcast, it's afternoon on Thursday, December 3rd, which is...
And it's freezing in here.
Oh, stop complaining. Put on your sweater.
Sweatshirt.
It's a landmark day in D-Backs history, men, because in just a few hours here at Chase Field, which is where we are right now up in the radio booth, the Diamondbacks will unveil their brand new uniform look. And by the time you listen to this podcast or download it, hopefully you will have seen the uniforms that will debut here tonight. It's been called D-Backs Evolution. The fashionistas will be here front and center. They have a runway down there right now over second base all over the infield here at Chase Field. It looks like we're at Chanel for the Paris' spring season collection.
How's this for freaky? Now, I did a thing. I'm doing a Hey Gub, and one of the words I used in my fashionistas.
Nice.
Unbelievable.
Wow. I didn't steal that. Just a coincidence.
Yeah.
Great minds.
Yeah, no, it's big doings.
The players will be here to model the many different and certainly unique color and design combinations that the Diamondbacks will wear next year, both home and road. It is really an evolution of the uniform. Safe to say, something truly, I think, unique to Major League Baseball. Now, we've all seen.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the time this is posted,
even you have
gotten
to see, Leo, the uniforms.
Yeah.
We've seen them. We got a sneak peek, and there's nothing like them.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
It's very. Yeah. I was thinking cutting edge, but more leading edge. It's definitely an evolution as well.
Yeah, it's a very different look. It's been, we are told, in the developmental stages for a couple of years now. They've been working on this. And a design, really a series of design looks that is very fashion forward. So that's all happening here tonight after we tape this. So if you haven't seen them, you should. Log on, I'm sure by now they'll be all over the Twitter and the Internet and the whole thing.
Still the Twitter.
Always will be. Very exciting new chapter. Baseball's winter meeting set to begin Monday in Nashville, so there's a lot going on here. And I have noticed, I don't know about you guys, the Diamondbacks really are quickly becoming a very trendy pick by media outlets all over the country as an intriguing contender here in 2016. Gub, I've seen the D-backs labeled from anywhere between a sleeper to a potential division winner next year.
I think if you look at the way the National League West played out this last season, the shortcomings of the other teams in the division, the fall apart of San Diego, what happened there, the Rockies being the Rockies, the Dodgers and Giants, they've got parts that they need. I think the Diamondbacks very well have a chance to, you know, contend, if not win the National League West going into 2016.
I mean, we have our ears to the baseball ground throughout the winter, and everything I watch, everything I read and see, people are jumping on the bandwagon here, picking the Diamondbacks as a team to watch. I found this very interesting. Just around Thanksgiving, Buster Olney from ESPN sent this out on the Twitter. Rival evaluators and players continue to see the Diamondbacks as a team that could be very dangerous in 2016 if they add some rotation help. And we'll talk about that with Tony
La Russa.
That's
no secret. Yeah. Not only starting rotation help, but they need some bullpen help. They need to figure out spots in that bullpen. I mean, they've got some nice pieces, but they need that bullpen to be solid from day one.
We went, sort of suffered through the grit narrative that became kind of a running gag among the baseball media a couple of years ago, but now the national narrative really seems to be coming around and recognizing the Diamondbacks as a team that is preparing to play a real part, I think, in next season's playoff picture. So we'll talk about all that as we preview the winter meetings. Our guests on this episode 26, or S2E1T26.
Right.
Sounds like a space movie or something.
The next generation.
Yes.
So it's season, episode. So it would be set. Season.
Game, set, match.
Yeah, there you go.
Season.
Set.
Yeah, season.
Episode.
I tell you what.
In total.
E1.
Set.
T26.
If the rest of them in season two go like this, there will be no season three. I can tell you
that.
We'll
have
to
have a whole segment just for naming the episode.
The Diamondbacks Chief Baseball Officer, Hall of Famer Tony La Russa, will be with us on this show. Tony will join us shortly here. We'll also be joined by the intrepid Steve Gilbert, who covers the Diamondbacks for MLB.com. Steve, one of the beat writers, has been busy. I've seen him already break some news about trades and coaching staff changes this fall, so he'll be here to talk about that. Tony La Russa joins us shortly. Let's quickly review what's happened since the end of the year, and there's been a lot here. 79-83, third place in the NL West, an impressive 15-game improvement in one season, first season of the new regime, but it's funny, you would think, Gub, that with a season like that and the momentum building, you wouldn't have so much turnaround of the coaching staff. But Chip Hale and company have been very busy. Mike Harkey was officially dismissed as pitching coach the day after the season ended. He has returned to the Yankees in his old job. Hark will be the Yankees' bullpen coach, so we wish him well there. He was always an absolute pleasure to
deal
with.
We'll see him next season, too.
Yeah, they're coming here. Right. Yeah, so I'm glad that worked out for him. He was a terrific guy to work with. Mel Stottlemyre Jr., the bullpen coach here, now the Seattle Mariners pitching coach under their new manager, Scott Servais. Hitting coach Turner Ward declined a contract to return next year here. This may become news by the time this is downloaded, but it's been reported he will be the Dodgers hitting coach.
Right. Under Dave Roberts, their new manager.
Their new manager. A lot of turnover in the NL West, too. Third base coach Andy Green, a big loss. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Hired as the new skipper of the Padres. So that's four key spots, Gubb, on Chip Hale's coaching staff that had to be filled.
And Mark McGuire is going to be Andy Green's bench coach.
How about that, huh?
I was shocked. I thought when Hark left, I thought that was going to be the extent of it. Yeah. I didn't expect anything else. The Andy Green hiring just kind of hit me between the eyes. I really liked Andy. I thought he brought a lot to the ball club. The defensive positioning by the Diamondbacks, he really got into that. I think it saved the Diamondbacks a lot of runs this past season. It's a loss to the organization. We wish him all the best. Turner Ward, I didn't see that one coming.
Certainly not to L.A.
No, and I don't think the Diamondbacks did either.
Yeah.
So, you know.
We'll ask Tony about that.
Yeah, and, you know, Stott, I talked to Mill at length when we were in Pasadena for the last road trip when we were playing the Dodgers. We sat down and had coffee. And one of the things that he said at that time, it's getting tougher and tougher each year for me to be so far away from my family. My father, Mel Stottlemyre Sr.,
he's had some health
who's
issues.
Had a lot of health issues. And so that one really didn't surprise me. And really it worked out well for him becoming the new pitching coach with Seattle.
Couldn't have worked out
yeah.
better. Yeah,
that's
the family
his neck
is
of the
up
woods.
There.
Right.
So
we wish him nothing but and all these guys.
Yeah. They were all wonderful. And I'm not sure the fans realize how important the coaching staff is because
the
you
amount
watch
of hours they put
yeah, you
in.
Watch the games, you see the base coaches, see the pitching coach come out to the mound a couple of times. But when you're here very early in the day, as we often are, and late at night, boy, these guys, they really work. You have to be a worker to be a coach, and these guys really put in the hours.
They're here before the players, and they're here well after the players leave.
And that's what a lot of people wondering if Barry Bonds is going to work out in Miami if that indeed happens. I can't see Barry Bonds doing soft toss at, 12:30 in the afternoon before 7 o'clock.
He might surprise you.
He might
surprise you.
Anyway, so here are the new names now. I know this is old news, but we're going to go over it in case you missed some of it. Let's start with Mike Butcher, D-backs pitching coach at the end of October. They had apparently at least a dozen candidates. He has spent the last 9 years as the Angels pitching coach under Mike Socia, and during that time had 9 different pitchers reach the All-Star game. He reportedly, Gubb, came into the interview and just blew everybody away with a detailed plan on how he will help each member of the rotation. It's not just a stamp where everybody do the same thing. This guy apparently really is good at working with people as individuals.
I met Butch years ago when he was with Tampa Bay. And at that time, I introduced myself and I said, you went to the same high school as my wife did back in the Quad Cities many years after Nancy graduated. So we've become to know each other. His wife, her family, Rustler's Roost, Enchiladas, if you're familiar with a couple of really good restaurants here in the Valley. He's a local guy. He's come home. He's excited. I've talked to him. And I think he'll do a tremendous job. I don't know what happened with Anaheim. He and Don Baylor were both relieved of their duties. But I think this is a big find for the Diamondbacks getting Mike Butcher in.
There seemed to be a lot of dysfunction in Anaheim.
Yeah, and I think they just kind of wanted to change things over with the new GM.
DePoto and Socia and that whole rift, and it got a little messy there. So Mike Butcher is here. Garvin Alston takes over as the bullpen coach. He's been with the Oakland A's the last 11 years.
I don't know really much about Garvin other than the fact I know the name. I remember him a brief cup of coffee in the major leagues.
He had 6 games with the Rockies in 1996.
Is brief.
He worked 6 career major league innings, played 8 years in the minors.
And he got there.
Has a son, Garvin Jr., who plays at ASU.
Oh.
Yeah. And he's lived here for he's lived here almost 20 years, Garvin Alston. So it's a great fit.
Yeah.
So that's your pitching coaches, Mike Butcher and Garvin Alston. Matt Williams is back. I don't think there's any doubt that Andy Green is going to be a star. We saw you talked to Andy for a while, and you can't help but come away impressed.
Yep.
So I think it was surprising, as you mentioned, that he got the Padres job based on experience and youth, but certainly not surprising when you know Andy because he's a tremendous talent. But having
he'll be prepared.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But having Matt Williams back, that's great news for everybody.
And
here.
Most of the guys who are still on the team know Matt.
Yeah.
He's only 2 years removed, the 2 years in Washington, one really great year, and a year that's they'll be forgettable. I know this. Matt will pour everything he's got into the Diamondbacks again as their third base coach and infield instructor.
And it's great after the way things ended in Washington that he was able to get right back in.
Yep.
He didn't have
to
have a year.
And he wanted to do that. He said that. I want to get right back to doing, it's teaching baseball and being a part of Major League Baseball.
He will coach third and handle the defensive positioning among the infielders, which is what Andy Green here did here in 2015. does that, of course, in conjunction with Dr. Ed Lewis, the director of analytics, and Dave McKay, of course, the best in the business at first base. So they're your two base coaches there. This was interesting, and some of this is still coming out about the hitting coach. Dave Magadan replaces Turner Ward. Turner apparently made it very clear that he was not coming back here, and it was an emotional decision for him. I'm sure it wasn't easy. He was very tight with a lot of the players here, did a tremendous job. They had four players finish in the top nine in hitting in the National League, all over 300. So that's a tough loss, but here comes Dave Magadan. And a lot like Mike Butcher, this guy brings a tremendous resume. He'd been in San Diego, won a World Series under Tito Francona in Boston, spent the last 3 years with Texas. Jeff Banister did a great job his first season as Rangers manager this year, but he inherited most of his Texas coaches, so Magadan was among them. So there was a mutual parting of the ways there after this season, but they apparently were very impressed with Dave Magadan.
I remember Dave Magadan. I'm going back a long way right now. In 1983, he was at the University of Alabama. We were in Omaha. I was doing Arizona State University baseball at that time, and Magadan was a star player at Alabama. I believe he hit well over 500 that year to lead the NCAA. Went on then and became a top-notch major league player. He's done a terrific job wherever he's been as a hitting coach, and he's got some talent here that he'll work with. He's got a lot of studying to do, a lot of video, I'm sure, to look at, see what the guy's tendencies are, try and pick things out. I'm sure he's going to call every one of the offensive players, guys on the current 40-man roster. How can I help you? Here's my phone number. Let's talk. Let's visit. But the fact that he's done it and been successful and he's got a name, I think, is going to be very fruitful for the Diamondbacks.
There's a common theme here with all the new coaches that just absolutely jumps out at you. And in one word, it's experience.
Yeah, a lot of it.
Butcher, 9 seasons in Anaheim. Magadan, 13 seasons as a big league hitting coach. You got Matt Williams, know all about that there. You bring in Glenn Sherlock, who's been here since day one like you. Dave McKay, the best in the business at first base. There's a lot of experience on that coaching staff.
And, Chip Hill did a terrific job, and these guys will all blend right in with him.
All right, so the roster moves now. We've already seen a few heading into the winter meetings. Jeremy Hellickson is now a Philadelphia Philly.
He was traded, by the way,
the same day.
Same day as he was dealt to the Diamondbacks a year previous.
He is now will now be pitching for the Phillies. Minor league right-hander Sam McWilliams comes to the Diamondbacks.
6'7", is he?
6'7", 20-year-old pitcher, eighth-round pick last year out of high school in Tennessee. Mid-90s fastball. He's shown apparently some flashes in the Gulf Coast League, so he's a young live arm.
Trim some fat off the money.
And that you hit the nail on the head right there. The Diamondbacks, we know this, even though they're out there looking for starting pitching, they have tons of depth in the rotation. So you move Jeremy to Philly. In the process, you save yourself some money. His salary here this year was 4.2. He figures in arbitration
closer
to be
to
about about six and a half, somewhere in there. Let's call him 6.5. So that's a $6.5 million savings right there that you can go out and spend on whoever you want.
Put it towards somebody else.
And so you save the money. You get a young live arm in return. You got plenty of depth to pick up the innings.
We don't have to worry about him pitching on getaway day.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny. Jeremy had some outings.
He was a great guy.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific guy. Really enjoyed him. Really fun to talk to.
He did have some good outings.
I was going to say great. He had some outings. You're like, wow, this guy's really on tonight.
And you see where he was a rookie of the year, know, the way he pitched.
And he hit.
He pitched is what he was.
He's a really good athlete. Yeah. But he had nights where that curveball was just dropping off the table. The changeup was working.
But he was so slow.
And inconsistent. You couldn't count on it.
Yeah.
So you move the money, and I think that was a good move for them. Chris Herrmann comes over here from the Twins. This is an interesting guy.
That was one of the first moves they made. That was really interesting. He's a catcher, infielder, outfielder?
He plays catcher. He plays both corner outfield spots, and he plays first base.
That's a good guy to have.
Yeah, he just turned 28 in November. Left-hand hitter. Hasn't hit much at all, about .188 in parts of four major league seasons in Minnesota. But you like the versatility defensively. Dave Stewart was also his agent when Dave was running his agency before taking the GM job here. Herrmann is out of minor league options, so that's something to think about when you're looking at roster spots. To get Herman, they traded Daniel Pelka, the third-round pick a couple of years ago.
Who was playing in the fall league and just switched uniforms.
Yeah, I was there. He had to actually sit out a game or two until they got him a Twins jersey because you have to wear the right uniform. But last 2 years at South Bend and Visalia, Pelka hit 51 home runs.
But where did he play?
He played, well, Visalia.
Yeah, but I mean, what position?
Oh, corner outfield. Yeah. But he had a 20-20 year in the Cal League last year. He can run a little bit. But I think, let's face it, a third-round pick, had a couple of nice seasons in A-ball, but there really, in all likelihood, was not going to be a long-term spot for him here. So you move him. And that prospect, you call him prospects for a reason. There was no spot for him here.
And you get a guy who can play a lot of different positions and may be able to help you. He's a left-handed bat.
And we saw how important versatility is. I mean, you got to have that. Alan Webster, designated for assignment shortly after that, traded to the Pirates for cash. The same thing always with Alan was the stuff at times is sensational.
But he looked like a deer in headlights.
He always, to me, and I never said this on television, but I'll say it now, he always looked scared to death.
Yeah, that's a deer in headlights. That's how he pitched.
He looked scared to death all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's a body language thing. But if he can ever get the makeup part figured out.
His stuff's nasty. I mean, when he's throwing it and he got command of it, it's nasty stuff.
Filthy. And the Pirates are good at kind of maybe
resurrecting.
There's always a team out there that thinks, hey, we can fix this guy. Mm. The Pirates are one of those teams. Oftentimes they do. So we wish him the best. Hope that works out for him. Let's see. News during the immediate post-Thanksgiving period. Did you guys have a nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah, we did.
Very nice Thanksgiving.
You and Nancy
Leo?
Had
a nice,
yeah, everyone had family had together. And
what was unique? Turkeys.
How original.
We did turkey this Thanksgiving.
Might do the same for Christmas.
You may start a trend there. You may start something.
A reported offer, and we'll ask Tony La Russa about this in just a moment. A reported offer to free agent pitcher Johnny Cueto, who just won a World Series ring in Kansas City. 6 years, $120 million was the
$20 million a year. Think
reported
about that.
Offer from the Diamondbacks for Johnny Cueto, which was rejected by the Cueto camp. Despite the fact, I thought this was interesting. Jordan Zimmermann, who I like a lot, the former Washington National, got 5 years, 110, and signed with the Tigers. They offered Cueto six at 120, and he said no. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, $20 million a year is a lot of coin to offer a pitcher.
Is Johnny Cueto worth it?
I don't know. We're going to find out. I mean, he and his agent think he's worth more. We'll see what kind of offers loom, over the next few weeks. I think when Greinke signs, and that's supposedly coming quick between the Dodgers and Giants, that's going to spearhead everything else because Price is already signed or is in the process of.
Right, 217
right,
from Boston.
With Boston, which shocked me. I didn't think he'd go to
Seven
Boston.
7 years, 217. He's got an out after three.
Yeah, I didn't think he'd go
he
to Boston.
He was apparently, Price, all set to sign with St. Louis, and then Dave Dombrowski threw another $30 million on there, and so Price just took the money. Well, I thought St. Louis would have been a great fit for him. Close to Nashville, he went to Vanderbilt. It would have been a great fit for him. National League versus
He's
American League.
He's had some
League.
Disparaging things to say about the Red Sox over the years.
Yeah, he and David Ortiz, boy.
Yeah.
But Big Poppy,
So he went for the money is what
piece.
He did.
He took the money, took which the money is fine, but now you're going to have to live with that too. Yeah. But he's got an out after three, so we'll see how it goes.
He better win.
I thought two smart moves with Cueto. Smart by the Diamondbacks to send a whole group down there
right.
and make a big formal presentation. It wasn't a phone call or a text. The Diamondbacks went down there to the Dominican, and we'll ask Tony about this, and made a pitch.
Yep.
I thought smart to get out ahead of that. Also probably smart by the Cueto camp to wait until Price and Greinke sign, see where the market settles. That gives you an idea of what you're really worth. Maybe I can get, if I'm Cueto, 150, 160 from somebody. If Price gets 217, Greinke maybe even gets more than that.
He may get that, but if I were the Diamondbacks, I don't think I'd offer more than $20 million a year. $120 million, that's a lot of
money. I'm with you. The thing about Zimmermann that scared people off, apparently, why he only got 5 for 110, was the fastball velocity has declined last
it
couple
was
of
down.
Years. Declined, and steadily. And the Tommy John, he's about 7 years removed from Tommy John. And that's oftentimes when you have other issues.
Caution flags.
So if you're going to sign him to a five-year deal, 7 years off Tommy John, you're thinking a year or two in, I might have trouble again here. So that might be why they stayed away from Jordan Zimmermann. Fox Sports' Ken Rosenthal has reported Diamondbacks and Braves have discussed Shelby Miller. This made me laugh out loud because Ken's reporting. But he reported that Atlanta tried to acquire A.J. They called about A.J. Pollock. And at first, they offered Shelby Miller, very good, young, controllable pitcher.
Yep.
They offered him Shelby Miller for A.J. Pollock straight up. Diamondback said no. Then they came back with a deal that I thought was laughably worse than that, which was Shelby Miller and Arodis Vizcaino for Pollock and Aaron Blair. I read that. I'm like, what are you, nuts?
Well, Atlanta's crazy right now anyway with what they're doing.
Well, but they have a plan. They have a plan.
They do?
Yeah. They're going to tank. It worked for the Astros, and it worked a little bit for the Cubs.
I was going to say, they abandoned this plan midway during the season each year.
Look, the plan might suck for the next couple of years, but
they're
doing what the Astros did, and to an extent the Cubs did, and that's what they're doing. But we're gonna, okay, you don't want to give Pollock. How about Pollock and your best pitching prospect? Hey, what?
I'm not moving Pollock.
No, nor am I. Nor am I. Yeah. He's one of the guys you build around here.
He's getting a lot of play. I mean, there are a lot of teams, I'm sure, that would like to have him. Well, maybe a year or two ago they could have.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Not after the year he had this year.
I'm not going to say they can't have him now, but I would be shocked if the Diamondbacks dealt him, and I sure don't want him to.
Well, here's the guy who knows. Let's ask our first guest about the interest in A.J. Pollock and other things hot stove as we get set for the winter meetings.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Baseball's winter meetings set to begin Monday, December 7th, running through Thursday the 10th at the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center in Nashville, Tennessee. The annual Convention of Baseball Executives, one of the highlights of the hot stove season, at which headline deals are often made blockbusters, perhaps, this year. The Diamondbacks, a team with some money to spend, we're told, and expected to be one of the teams to watch at the winter meetings this year. The Hall of Famer, D-backs Chief Baseball Officer Tony La Russa, is with us once again on D-backs Podcast. Happy holidays, and thanks for taking the time.
Well, looking forward to it. This is an exciting time of year. We've dropped out of contention, so we had quite a bit of September and all of October and November. We've had a lot of meetings. We've got really a great professional scouting situation going with Mike Russell and DeJohn Watson leading it, and so we've got all the information. Now comes the confusing part about trying to make it work for something.
Yeah, how would you characterize the Diamondbacks' position and preparedness for this year's winter meetings versus last year when it was still sort of a transition period in the front office?
I think just on the front office side, we're a lot stronger, added some really key people, like Snip and Wilkins. A ton of experience working with Mike Russell for the first time. So I think there was a reassignment of how our professional scouts went about their business. Instead of geographically, it went by teams, which produces better, both quality and quantity of information.
So the same guys just follow the same team, so there's familiarity there?
Right. And it's common that teams would do the economical thing. You'd kind of take geographical locations so your scouts aren't banging all over if the team is kind of spread out all over. So the information, even starting in spring training right through, has just been really accurate, and a lot of it very impressive. Then you start working at, okay, who are we, what are we, what do we need, and where's the fit? And led by Dave Stewart, has really put in a lot of time. Well, we just today is Thursday as we speak, and Wednesday we had a conference call with, over 2 hours with all our scouts from across the country just discussing potential deals that Dave has been involved in, talks about. Obviously, you go through the free agents, the complications of the free agents, whether they're protected with a qualifying offer so they cost you the draft choice and the 13th pick, and no draft choice, value. I mean, it's for someone that the offseason, we met the offseason.
Those days are over,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, last year I got a taste of it. This year, as we kind of suspected, there's a lot of long days, and the stakes are high because where we are is, and I think that's the back end of the question that you asked, and we're a different place. We've got a lot of players after the successful season in many regards. I know we still lost more than we won, But we have a lot of guys that are being asked about because they're talented and they're inexpensive, and there's a lot of control years. So what makes them attractive to other clubs makes them attractive to us.
You mentioned players sought after. Is A.J. Pollock maybe the most sought after player right now in baseball? It seems like his name is always on the MLB Network or somewhere, going somewhere.
I'll give you a healthy kind of tip. The more that somebody is discussed on television, it's less likely that either it's not that they're not a legitimate player of interest, but that there are legitimate talks. Because
wait, you're saying the TV guys are wrong?
No. No, it's just that the TV guys are in the business.
Stirring it up.
They got to create material, yeah. You know, and you go on the, you know, I mean, I love the MLB Network. I think it's wonderful, but when you have that much programming, you know, you got to come up with stuff, and they'll take like a scintilla of stuff, or they'll, you know, somebody will feed it to them. You know, these teams and agents can be very unscrupulous, you know, not unscrupulous, they're devious. So they'll throw something out there and they jump on it. Mm-hmm. And if you've just been in negotiations sometimes and you know that's 180 degrees different from what just reported, and you think, okay, let's just take it all with a grain of salt. But they're working hard enough at it that you know, you don't totally discount it. Point I'm making on AJ is that, I mean, he had a great season. You could tell the experience is starting to build into a really special player, and he's what everybody's looking for. He's a all-around player who still is relatively inexpensive and has got a lot of career ahead of him. So, you know, but to think that we have had serious negotiations is absolutely 180 degrees wrong. What we have is we've taken all the calls. We appreciate it. We understand it. But it hadn't even been close yet to anything of significance.
It was reported by ESPN that there was a Diamondbacks contingent, of which you were a part, that went to the Dominican and talked with the Johnny Cueto camp. What can you tell us about that process to this point?
Well, it's all true. That part's true. And, you know, we made a calculated evaluation, one that I was a part of. In fact, I use in my input the example of the winter of 1988 with the A's. We just had that really good year, 104 wins, swept Boston, got beat by the Dodgers. Looking forward, we had a really good club, and we wanted to get deeper in the starting rotation. There was a guy out there that was perfect for us, and it was Mike Moore. So we jumped ahead of the market, and we flew down to Oklahoma with our group and made the impression, and shortly thereafter we signed Mike. So we looked at Johnny, and we said, look, this is a guy that fits us really well, and if this gets into a real bidding contest, it isn't that, you know, our ownership is, they've clearly said, make an offer to Johnny, so they're serious. But, you know, there's a limit. You know, we can't afford to be wrong.
Yeah.
And there's a limit to how far you want to go and not have some kind of negative after effects 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So we thought that if we go down there early and make a legitimate offer, we could get in ahead of what could be a crush for Johnny as some of the pitching starts disappearing, for example, Price being signed. So we made a really good offer, and I think he and his agent felt like, you know, I think we need to be more patient and see what else is coming our way. And at the time, the offer had a deadline to it. So, you know, we pulled it so we wouldn't be out there just being somebody's you know, ammunition for him to get more money. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. If it came back around that somewhere in that area, you know, we were still in a position to make a move, then we would still be interested. So I'm just giving you, and I think this is good information for our fans. You know, we thought we'd jump in there quick, and sometimes, as you see, teams that are moving aggressively, this has been a pattern the last 3 or 4 years, the more aggressively you move before the winter meetings, the more success you have. Because the winter meetings can be held hostage to the agents with free agent players or pitchers. So a lot of clubs sitting around waiting and waiting. There's a lot of discussion. So we made it, and I appreciated the organizational kind of attitude. Look, we have no regrets. We'll go there, take our best shot. If it doesn't work, we know we took our best shot, which we did. And to this point, it hasn't worked.
Well, presumably, I'm sorry, Gub. Presumably, once the market settles, the Cueto camp will get a better idea of where they fit in money-wise. But it seems like there was a specific effort on the part of the Diamondbacks that they've identified Johnny Cueto as the guy that you like, and you made a real effort to go get him. What was it about Cueto versus some of the other guys out there? Because there's a lot of starting pitching out there.
Well, for our case, we really like the youth of our pitching. And we are looking for somebody that's got some experience pitching at the top of a rotation. Somebody that, you know, it's just like if you have a couple of hitters and you had a couple more, that all four of them hit better because it spreads the pressure around. Mm-hmm. If you only have like one pitcher or two pitchers, it makes it tough because the other three guys are, man, I got to get. So Johnny, we feel, is a guy that is not afraid to pitch at the top of the rotation, take the ball on opening day, whatever. There are some other guys out there, obviously Price and Greinke, everybody talked about. But that wasn't, you know, that could not be a smart move for our franchise. And then you look at the other guys available, and we thought that one of the real important assets for us with Johnny is that he is not a give-up a first-round draft choice.
And that makes because he was traded in mid-season, right. So you don't have to give up the pick.
And that makes him attractive to other teams as well.
Yeah, that's big. I think a lot of the fans would like to know, Tony, when you go to a winter meeting like this, how big of a contingent will the Diamondbacks take?
Great question. There are different opinions on that from organization to organization. I think last year we had a healthy contingent because it was also a let's get to know each other.
Sure.
You know, you had a brand new front office. You had scouts who had been with the organization. We also had added guys. This year, there's a year of familiarity, but we're not still like old shoes or anything. You know, we're still getting to know each other. Plus, we have added some more scouts. So I would say we probably will have one of the larger groups there. And plus, you know, you get Chip there and you get Mike Butcher there and, you know, Gonzo's there and JJ's there. I mean, we have, you know, we like the discussions. And here's, I think, if you ask me my favorite part of the winter meetings, and when you do it right, and for a while it kind of got away from it, and lately it's better. The stuff that happens in the lobbies, in the corners, where you get baseball people during breakfast time, lunchtime, dinner time, cocktail time, and you have, if you have enough manpower that's fanned out over all these little nooks and crannies, now that's the information that you can take to the bank versus, you know, what's being leaked out to the press. Mm-hmm. And I can give you, I don't know, I probably don't want to embarrass a franchise. We want to make one of the biggest deals during the time I was with the Cardinals because of a piece of information that came one night late from one of our scouts that was having a glass of milk with a couple of guys from another organization.
And milk and cookies, probably.
Milk and cookies. And we were getting ready to think this isn't going to work because it's unreasonable. And the guy said, hey, the guy said, keep pushing because it'll work. And we pushed, it worked, and it was great for the – so that's my favorite part, when you walk around and baseball people are talking baseball, and everybody's trying to, you know, do right by their organization. But, you know, you take these old-timers, and young-timers, you know, they're not going to lie to each other. Mm-hmm. They might shade the truth. Anybody, you know, Greg, he's really got everything he ever had where he might have lost a little bit. But by and large, they're very candid, and it's very, very informative.
I've been to a couple of winter meetings, and it is from morning until deep into the night, that lobby is a beehive.
Yeah.
And it really is a unique environment. What about Kenta Maeda, Tony, and the idea that he might post, and he's an option as well? Because it clearly, as you've said, the Diamondbacks have some money to spend here, and they need starting pitching.
Well, there's one guy that, on that trip to Japan, we saw him pitch.
Yeah.
And he was impressive, very athletic, you know, not big and burly, but, you know, trim, you know, and athletic looking. He had a nice mix of pitches, competed well. And I think, realistically, he'll pitch in the big leagues. The difficulty when you assess value is not what his yearly would be times the years. It's the posting fee.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a healthy posting fee.
$20 million.
Now you can come in at 15, and maybe it doesn't get to 20. You take a risk, but I think the best answer I can give you is I think he's a guy that will pitch in the big leagues. We're interested in him, and you try to weigh it versus the other alternatives.
the pitching is at end of the season. Hey, you bring in a new pitching coach now, Mike Butcher. What's he bring to this ball club?
Really impressed with him. You know, you observe from the other side for years and years and years, and in some cases you have intimate knowledge, like, you know, Socia and I are good friends, and, you know, Albert's there. So you get better information at times on a personal side, but you're still observing professionally. And Mike has got a really great resume. And if you watched the type of pitchers that he had, there was a lot of flexibility and what kind of staff you have from year to year. And he showed the ability to work with everybody, you know, starters, relievers, plus stuff, guys that had to pitch. And since he's been with us, I mean, we're here today. We met with, you know, with Chip and Stu and our guys, and then we went to lunch and we've been talking ball, and he has what I like to always describe about Dunk. He's got the experience and the talent to take a pitcher with just about any kind of problem. So he's not just a mechanics specialist. He's not just a tweak and add something game planner. I mean, I think he can do it all. So we're really excited and very fortunate to have him.
Are you concerned at all about the turnover on the staff? Lost some really talented coaches.
Yeah, that's Chip and I have talked about it. You know, this is a very abnormal off season, and not just because it was his first one, but because I think working for him and the kind of family he creates on that coaching staff and working for this organization, you're going to have a lot of guys who want to stay around.
Yeah.
But just the way it turned out, you know, a young star like Andy gets a chance, and he's gone. You know, nobody can begrudge Mel being wanting mm-hmm. to be close to family. Mm-hmm. But that was a blow to us because Mel is very talented, and we wanted to be part of it. And then finally Turner. You know, that one was a little tougher to understand in pieces. But he's, you know, he has to do what's right for his family and himself. I do know that, you know, we've had to make sure that our players understand that it isn't like we drove Turner away, but then you start getting serious about replacing him. Dave Magadan got a great resume himself and really, really impressed, and will come at our hitters in exactly the kind of style and philosophy that we like. So, I thought one of the edges we had going after all the newness last year, that we would have a lot of continuity, and we're back to where there's some newness. But, well, we improved by 15 wins, so it can be worked on.
And you got a ton of experience, too. Yeah. That's a very impressive.
And bring Matt Williams back into that mix, too.
Yeah, that whole staff is a ton of experience. Yeah.
Well, punch me for not mentioning Matt, but we lose Andy, but you bring Matt back. And, you know, here's a guy that I had only known from the other side. And the question I had is, when I've watched Matt, you know, he's like John Wayne. You know,
that's a good one. Yeah, you're right, he is.
You know, he competes against you. He doesn't say hello. He's out there trying to beat you. He's tough as nails. And I thought, well, as a coach, those are all good qualities, but you got to communicate. Right. Then I find out from guys that had him here that great communicator, great worker. And this is one of the things you learn about the great players. Sometimes they stand around the cage and look what I used to do. But, you know, Matt, as I found out, I'm not pleased that his stint in Washington ended, but it's really good news for us because he'll do a great job for us.
You've got to be extremely happy with the way the offense and the defense played last season. Offensively, you know, you look at the outfield, guys over 300 to go along with Goldie. You know, the infield showed improvement. Defensively, they were among the best, if not you were the top defensive team in all of baseball last season. So that is one of the areas of strength of this ball club, offense and defense. Are a lot of teams coming to the Diamondbacks saying, hey, we want this guy, we want this guy, can we work a trade? Are you getting over inundated with trade offers right now?
Well, we have been approached dramatically more than we were last year, because of the impression these guys have made, even like Inciarte and Pollock.
Right.
I mean, Inciarte and Peralta. Last year at this time, they had a nice, but not the whole year like they had. But, you know, we can see where they're coming from, because that's why they're such great value to us. You know, when you talk about our year, And, you know, I try to be myself in all ways possible. I thought that defensively we were an outstanding club. I think we ran the bases with a lot of intelligence and intensity. But I thought it showed not just the talent on our offensive team, but the potential, because we did some good things. But you can pick apart, and this is what we're trying to do. You could pick apart series that we had. You know, we got swept.
Yeah. Philadelphia.
Nine times. Well, we got swept by the Cardinals twice, swept by the Dodgers, you know, Pittsburgh. You know, we got swept nine times, Mets. And if you watch those games, I don't think we were happy that we didn't get a win in there. So you're going to lose a series. So I tell you, the easiest thing to look at is our strikeouts. Teams that win, you take Houston if you want to, but teams that win the situations where you have to score a run, get a rally started, get them around, get them in, the idea is to put the ball in play.
Hurt the Cubs, too, I thought.
It hurt the Cubs. Kansas City.
They were unbelievable.
I just read an article in Sports Illustrated that they're formulating a new model, and I almost laughed at that. That's the model that the Giants used to win three championships. The Cardinals used. That's just good baseball that's been played for years. So if you look at our team, I may not be sitting here next year if our team doesn't significantly improve that era of putting the ball in play when you get two strikes and saving the at-bats. So I see our offense, and I think they're talented and did a really good job. But there are more runs out there and more wins, and we expect to get them this year.
Well, that process is underway and ongoing, and it should ramp up next week in Nashville. Tony, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Anytime. I enjoyed it.
Governor.
Now, the man who's seen it all.
Now, we got the ball, and this is a bat.
The D-backs play-by-play voice since our very first game, and then some.
Now, look at here.
It's this week's edition of Hey, Gubna!
So the 2016 Arizona Diamondbacks will take the field on April 4th here, right here at Chase Field against Colorado Rockies, donning new uniforms. Not a radical change. And by the time you hear this podcast, you'll have seen the unis via Twitter, Facebook, social media, and you'll have formed your own opinion. Let's take a look back to the Diamondbacks' inaugural season, 1998. That's a long time ago. Season number 19 coming up in 2016. The home uniforms were white full sleeves with purple pinstripes. Diamondbacks was spelled out across the front. Numbers on the front and back were in purple and teal, as were the players' names. There were also sleeveless jerseys, and there were purple jerseys. There were purple caps, there were white caps, and even a teal cap with a purple bill that I remember. Road jerseys were gray with purple pinstripes, and Arizona spelled across the front chest. Names on the back were in purple, road caps were black, and the bills were teal. Plenty of uniforms, caps, all used in different combinations. Fashionistas were the 1998 expansion Arizona Diamondbacks. And things pretty much stayed the same, with a few minor changes here and there over the next nine seasons. But things changed drastically in 2007 in a big way. Purple and teal were out. Sedona red was in. And with a color and uniform change, the team prevailed on the field, winning the National League West for the first time since 2002. Coincidence? Of course. The 2016 uniform change is not as radical as what happened in 2007, what with the color change and all. After all, that was a total overhaul. But these unis, I think you're going to like them. And as I said, you've probably already seen them and formed your own opinion. The uniform unveiling on this December 3rd, 2015, unveils an innovative and an exciting look and evolution. The end product conceived and designed with heavy input from Diamondback players. Who knows, maybe we'll see another 2007 on-field performance and a Western Division title. The pieces are there, especially with the bats and the gloves. It all comes down to the pitching, and every effort's being made to upgrade the 2016 starting rotation and bullpen.
Joined now on D-backs podcast by the is imminent a word? Eminent?
He's a really
good guy.
Beat
writer of theirs. He's a really good guy and covers the Diamondbacks for MLB.com. It's Steve Gilbert on D-backs podcast, a return engagement for you in the program. Welcome back.
I'm imminent. I like that. This is imminent because I'm here. But I think you meant eminent.
Eminent.
Right?
Yes, that's what I was going for. I speak professionally.
He has word
for
trouble.
A living. So, by the time people download this and everything, the uniforms might be old news, but it's big news tonight as we tape this Thursday into the evening here. We're about 2 hours away from the unveiling. You have told me that you have seen the uniforms, correct?
I have seen mock-ups of the uniforms.
You've seen
correct.
Mock-ups.
Yes, I have.
Now, no one was supposed to see these except us, but you, through your hard work and your sources, have managed to scrape up a look at the uniforms. Your thoughts?
I think that it should appeal to the younger generation. I think it's we've entered a new era of uniforms, I think, where you see it in college football all the time. Teams are changing them every week, and people seem to really like it. So I think that's a generational thing, too. I think back, now I'm sounding like I'm old, but back when I was a kid, when everybody had the same jersey. They wore one for road, one for home. They don't do that anymore.
Can we say cutting edge?
Cutting edge. I like that, cutting edge. I mean, I think it's something that's going to appeal to to people today. They like to have different. They like to have change, and we'll see.
Gubb and I were speaking with one D-backs player who described them as bold. They're bold.
They are.
They're bold. I've heard a lot of people describe them as the Oregon of baseball.
The Oregon football. Yeah, Oregon football. They get like 90 different uniforms. There's certainly a lot of combinations. Some of them are cool. Others...
I think they're going to be a hot seller. I mean, the younger generation's really going to like it.
And, you know, hey, Pirates won a World Series in 1979 with all those different uniform
we
tops
are
and
family.
Combinations. So who knows? I would have liked to have seen them go with the hats, with the pillbox hats.
The pillbox pirate hat, yeah.
That would have been better. But, can't get everything in 1 year.
Steve, it seems to, I think, come at a good time. This is a franchise, and we talked about this earlier on the show. I think the national narrative from a couple of years ago where people sort of mockingly joked about grit, and there was that narrative. Now it seems like to me when I read things and watch shows and listen to radio shows and other things, people are picking the Diamondbacks as a team that will contend in 2016. A dangerous team. They were described that way by Buster Olney. So the new uniforms, the new look seems to come at a good time where people are looking at this entire organization differently. What's your perception about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right about that. I think last year those of us who were watching on a daily basis could kind of see that coming, could see the young lineup they were putting out there and some of the potential and some of the younger players coming through and the fact that they were going to have this financial flexibility coming up. And the national narrative was still stuck on 2014 when they were had the worst record in baseball. But now they've got these young guys kind of coming into their own, kind of cost-controlled in terms of their position players. And now if they're able to add some starting pitching this offseason, certainly I think they're right in the conversation in the NL West. I don't think there's any question about that.
You know, you used a term there that has become, I think, the term of baseball nowadays, even with the high-spending teams, cost control. And all teams are looking for that, aren't they?
Absolutely. And when you got a guy like Goldschmidt, it's a lot of money for you and me and everybody, but in baseball terms, he doesn't make a lot of money. Pollock is still not making a lot of money. You got Peralta, Enciarte, Jake Lamb. I mean, you got a number of different guys that are under control and reasonable costs. So now is the time why they probably have the $120 million to bid on Johnny Cueto because the position players are under cost control and reasonable for the next few years.
I guess it shouldn't come as a surprise that AJ's name is bantered about by a lot of different members of the media, a lot of teams interested in acquiring his talent. Cost control, one of the things you were talking about right there, but he really, the type season guy he had last year, he was heading for 2 years ago before Cueto hit him with a pitch.
May 31st,
yeah. So, I mean, maybe he came as a surprise to some. I don't think he was so much of a surprise to us. Continuing through the whole season, maybe a little bit of the power numbers and the base running ability, but this guy can do it all right now.
Yeah, I would be really surprised if they moved A.J. Pollock. I just don't see that. I know that. You know, there's always, it sounds like his name is out there a lot because people are mentioning, hey, they talked to the Diamondbacks about A.J. Pollock. It's always hard to know when you're sure. listening to these rumors. What does it mean that we talked about A.J. Pollock, that I called you and I said, hey, we're interested in A.J. Pollock, and you said no? you know, does that mean that they're talking about AJ Pollock? So
that's up to
surprised.
You to figure that out.
That's right. That's right. So it's,
you know, one of the interesting
tricky part.
This is the silly. This is the silly season, and this is the time when it's really hard when you're in my job.
Sure.
To try to separate, you know, what does this mean? They're talking about a guy, or they would listen on. I mean, that's a tough thing.
Bert, we heard Tony earlier talk about the outfield. It's not deep. I mean, you've got Peralta,
you know,
Pollock, Inciarte, Tomas. You've got
Brito. He mentioned Brito,
but he's not quite ready yet, or you know, it could be kind of a stretch. But there's not. He doesn't foresee the outfield as deep beyond those four guys that I just mentioned right there in the organization.
That was surprising to me.
Yeah. You know, another reason why they won't get rid of Pollock. I mean, look at his numbers. You look at his, if you want to look at advanced metrics, his WAR is right up there in the top
fourth,
you know,
in the National League.
So that's
you know, good. It's one thing to have an outstanding Gold Glove, young, controllable player with cost certainty there, but it's another thing to have that player at a premium position.
Yes.
And that's the situation the Diamondbacks find themselves in. They have a young, cost-controlled, outstanding Gold Glove MVP-type player at a premium position. I think that makes him even more valuable.
Absolutely. And you pair him with Goldschmidt, who's, you know, a cost certainty here the next few years at a very reasonable price, and that's a 1-2 punch that's pretty good.
Just out of curiosity, you guys like AJ in the 1 or 2 spot, or you like him 3 and Goldie 4?
I kind of liked
him 3.
I always have voted for AJ as a middle of the order bet. I think he's an RBI guy for me. I mean, there are days when you don't have other options. You know, if you're out there against a lefty and Peralta's got the day off, and Ender may or may not be in the lineup, I can live with having AJ bet up there 1 or 2. But for me, he's a 3, 4, 5.
I like
guy.
Him right ahead of Goldie. Did you like
what
that
you
last
think?
Year?
Yeah, I like that. I like that last year. The only thing I like about Goldie in the 3 hole is that he gets up in the first inning. And gets, you know,
right.
If you hit Pollock 2, I don't know if that's a waste of his talent or not, but. Maybe against left-handers, he hits leadoff just because I don't know what your other option is.
Now, let's get your take. It's a little more subjective than ours. On the pursuit of Johnny Cueto and where things are right now, as far as all the information you have.
Well, the information that I have, which you know is never fully complete, is not privy to all the discussions that they have. Is that they made the initial 6-year, $120 million offer to him. They flew down to actually talk to him in person just to show him how important that he was to them. And his agent wanted to test the market, which I know turning down $120 million, my Twitter feed blew up when I tweeted that out.
If you think you can get 160 or 180, then
And certainly in this pitching market, you know, you turn around and Jordan Zimmermann's getting 22, an average of 22, and now David Price signs for what he signed for, and Greinke's going to come off the board, and then you're going to be the top guy left. Yeah, he's probably going to do better than 6 years, $120 million. But I think it showed that they were at least sincere about reaching out and trying to find a top-level pitcher.
Can the Diamondbacks go beyond that figure and that amount of years?
I mean, they could probably. Would they?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're right about at their comfort level there, if not a little above it.
My understanding is they're at about 62 now, somewhere between 60 and 62, and they can go to 100.
Yeah, if you figure in your arbitration guys, right?
Yeah.
Cueto
right.
comes with a gamble, too. I mean, you know, there have been a lot of people who said that arm's about ready to go. I mean, you could say that almost with anybody. And it's a fine line you walk with a pitcher, sign him to a long-term contract, because we've seen it time after time, Steve, over the years. Somebody gets a big contract. Somebody doesn't even get a big contract. It's on his way maybe to a contract someday, and, you know, that arm blows out.
And you look at it, I mean, in a lot of ways these days, these clubs know that going in.
Yes.
So when they're signing a contract, they're not expecting the guy to be the guy in those last couple of years. It's just all part of the overall cost of having him. And I'm not sure that the Diamondbacks can do something like that, given what their payroll could be 6 years from now.
I thought Tony put it really well when we talked to Tony LaRusso, Steve, earlier.
I know where you're going with this.
They can afford to do it, but they can't be wrong.
Yes.
And they're a team, you know, if Boston gives David Price $217 million, now granted he's got an opt-out after 3, but if they screw up down the road with that, and they probably will given his age, they can eat that, the back end of that, and live and survive and
Diamondbacks
be okay.
Diamondbacks can't do that.
So that, I think, is where the real difference lies. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right about that. And I think that you can look at it and say they have $40 million to spend this year, but then that what's that do going forward? Because, you know, if they have hopes of signing Goldschmidt to an extension, he's going to cost more in 4 years. Pollock is going to cost more in 4 years. And suddenly that, you know, the $40 million that you had to play with right now is not there, you know. And so can you afford to be paying a pitcher $20 million 5 years from now, 4 years from now, whatever the situation might be?
Another option that we've heard a lot about, that we know they've watched him for a couple of years now, maybe more closely than any other major league team, is Kenta Maeda. What about that?
Well, I think they're definitely interested in him, and I just read something, I think it was Baseball America, that talked about the fact that his changeup looked much better last time that he had pitched in competition, which, you know, makes him even more attractive. Again, you know, they showed with Tanaka a couple of years ago that they're serious, and they you know, paid the big posting fee and I mean, put up the big posting fee. They didn't have to pay it because they didn't sign him. And then really, you know, stretched their comfort zone there trying to sign him to a contract. So I know that Stu really likes Maeda. He's watched him. He likes him. And that's a guy you don't have to give up a draft pick for. You don't have to give up, you know, your prospects for. You do have to give up a heck of a lot of money. But, you know, I think they'll be interested.
It seems like with his stuff, and as you said, there was a great Baseball America piece that said the stuff is better than ever now. Gubb, for me, that's a much more attractive option because you're going to have to pay, but you're not going to have to pay $120 million to get Maeda.
I agree. And, you know, that's, I still think they need two starters coming out of the offseason and heading into next year to go along with Corbin, Ruby, and Robbie Ray. Mm-hmm. And so Maeda would be one, possibly, and then you know, Cueto, who wouldn't cost him the pick, that would be big right there, hanging on what, number 13, I think, in that first round.
Yeah,
so that
13.
That would be big, and I think that's something they need to do.
What else is going on out there that you always have your ear to the ground? What's happening?
Well, I mean, I think that it's going to be real interesting to see what happens in Nashville next week. I think that
you will be there, right?
Oh, I'll be there.
Okay.
Remember how busy the week before this week was last year compared to what it is right now?
Yeah, although you got now prices off the board, and you know, you got some guys signing the big deals. Before last year, we were waiting for Lester to sign, and once that happened, then the dominoes started rolling. I'm wondering if Greinke's signing, whether it's the Dodgers or the Giants that get him, kind of then starts another dominoes going while everyone's in Nashville, because I think there's a lot of teams that have young pitching to trade, whether it's the Indians with Carrasco, whether the Marlins are serious about shopping Fernandez.
Shelby Miller.
I've heard the Carrasco price is outrageous. And they're asking for an arm and a leg.
And Sonny Gray's price tag is outrageous with the
Look
A's.
Look at Cleveland's outfield right now. They need a lot of help.
Yeah, they got problems.
So, I mean, you know, again, what happens once these free agent pitchers start coming off the board? What does that do to the trade market? Do teams want to jump on? You know, it's there's a lot of moving pieces, and that's why it's so hard to figure out, and it's going to be interesting.
You got a wild card name, and this is the show for crazy theories, but a guy out there that you're kind of, hey, maybe the Diamondbacks and this guy, a name that we haven't maybe heard associated with Arizona yet.
I don't know if it's a name you haven't heard. I still think Sonny Gray is a guy that's a possibility. I know the A's say they don't want to trade him, but I think they'll trade him, but they just want a lot for him now. You know, what happens, do the Diamondbacks, are they able to is Maeda going to be posted, or do they feel they have a shot at him? How quickly does that come together? That could impact whether or not they're active for another big-name guy.
Let me ask you this. Let's take you away from the starting rotation. Let's go to the bullpen. Are they set on Ziegler as a closer, or do you think they'll still look if there's somebody that they could drop Ziegler back into that role of using him seventh, eighth inning, or whatever?
Well, they wanted Chapman
bad
at last trade deadline, and they still like Chapman, but he's just going to be too expensive, both prospect-wise, that you're going to have to give up now and then sign him to an extension because he's a free agent after next year.
Yeah, you only get him for 1 year.
Yeah.
So
that's not worth it to me.
I think they looked at it, and they initially thought that they would get a closer, but then they started to prioritize what they have and what they need. And Ziegler at $5.5 million saves 30 games and 32 chances. That's pretty good.
Well, so if you can get a Jake McGee, who I love, from Tampa Bay, if you want to take on the Andrew Miller money from the Yankees, I've seen that name out there. There's a lot of different ways. It's cheaper to build up the setup guys than it is to go out and spend money on a big-time closer.
Because you look, and like Will Harris has a great year out of the bullpen last year for the Astros.
That,
who saw that coming below 2 ERA? So the bullpen you can kind of fill in when you have a guy like Ziegler who doesn't do it the traditional way, but heck, for two out of the last 3 years, he's had a lot of success in the closer
30 of 32, it's hard to beat that.
Let me ask both of you guys, Hudson back in the bullpen next year?
I know he wants to start. He really
I
wants
too,
to start.
Yeah.
They have said, and they've been consistent about this, Gubb, it's his career.
Yeah.
He gets to choose. We'll work with him. We'll tell him what we think. But in the end, it seems like it's Huddy's decision, and it seems like he really wants to try life as a starter. What do you think? Where do you think his best fit is?
I think if they're able to get two pitchers, then he's very valuable in that bullpen.
I agree.
I mean, as a guy comes in throwing 100 miles an hour out of the bullpen.
Yeah. Now, say they sign Maeda and they don't get another one, maybe you give him that shot.
Maybe you give him that shot. Right?
A lot of options. Steve Gilbert, hey, enjoy Nashville. I know you love the country music and the cowboy. Will you be wearing cowboy gear?
I got a cowboy cap. I had. I can.
The hotel in Nashville is one of the worst for the winter meetings. It's that big biodome. You feel like you're in a biodome. It's all enclosed. You never breathe fresh air for 4 days.
And it's the size of Rhode Island.
Yes.
I've been there. It's insane how big that place is.
They have a boat that goes through it that takes you from one end to the other.
Because you can't walk it.
Yeah. So
you'd leave on Monday. You'd get to the other side by Thursday.
You're going to go to Dolly Parton World or whatever it is?
Dollywood.
I'm really hoping that they were going to just say, you know what, San Diego worked so well last year, we're going to do it in San Diego every year. But
that was a good setup. You and Nick Pecoro will be riding in the boat together down through the hotel lobby.
Nick will have his little anchor cap on.
Yeah. His Gilligan hat.
Those are gondolas. I don't think that's a good thing for Nick and I to be riding across there. But.
Steve Gilbert. Steve, thanks very much.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
We're ready to smack you over the head with some serious analytics.
Thermodynamics? Hypermathematics?
Like a wrestler with a folding chair.
Layeth the smack it down.
It's go time for Sabermetrics Smackdown.
Back by lukewarm popular demand, it's the off-season hit that's sweeping the country, Sabermetrics Smackdown.
We wanted it.
That's two. Well, everybody's least favorite segment, Leo.
Luke's always been a fan of the SmackDown, so get it, lukewarm.
Oh, I see what you did there, Luke. I thought you meant Luke Walton, the coach of the Golden State Warriors.
The 0-0.
How's that working out for Steve Kerr, by the way?
0-0, Luke Walton.
Does Kerr get credit with those wins?
I mean, does he look in the mirror and go, wow, what kind of coach am I? I just won a world championship, and this guy's 20-0. Anyway, we want to congratulate on SmackDown. Paul Goldschmidt and A.J. Pollock on their Gold Glove Awards. Goldie tops in the National League in defensive runs saved among first basemen. A.J. led all National League center fielders on Sabermetrics Smackdown. Two things we want to point out, and this is where the analytics come in. The Major League leader in defensive runs saved, and we've talked about how defensive runs saved works and how it's measured and all that stuff. The Major League leader was Tampa Bay center fielder Kevin Kiermaier, who had 42 defensive run saves all by himself.
That's a lot.
He was way out ahead of everybody. So you see the gold gloves for the Diamondbacks, Goldie at first base, A.J. Pollock in center. But I thought it was important to point this out, and this is where the analytics really help you illustrate these thoughts. Ender Inciarte. Okay, we know Ender's a very good defender. He played all over the outfield, all three spots. He totaled 29 defensive runs saved this year. Now, the formula for defensive runs saved, because it places different values at each position, all the outfield spots don't have the same score, as it were. They're graded differently because they really are different positions. So because of that, it doesn't total all your metrics at each spot into one outfield number. So Ender, he kind of got screwed a little bit there when it comes to the math. He won't show up on the leaderboards, but if he did, Ender's 29 defensive runs saved would have given him the second highest total in all of Major League Baseball behind Kiermaier. So that's how good Kiermaier was.
Yeah, 13 more.
And that's how good Ender Inciarte was. So we just want Diamondback fans to be aware. You watch the games, you know this anyway, but the math quantifies it. Let's give Ender the credit he deserves. Goldie and AJ were sensational defensively. They were deserved Gold Glove winners. But on that final note, that sabermetric thought, look at what Ender did. Second best defensive player in baseball, really. And the Diamondbacks as a team, we know they were really good defensively. How good were they? This is, again, where defensive runs saved come in. They were head and shoulders the best defensive team in baseball, not even close. The Diamondbacks as a team, guys, 71 defensive runs saved for the year. The next closest team to the Diamondbacks, number two, the team that gets so much attention for being a great defensive team was the Royals at 56. 71, 56. Look at the drop-off there. Well behind the Diamondbacks.
It's 15.
Nice work. The third-place team was the Marlins at 37 in defensive run saved. So with the exception of the World Series champions, the Diamondbacks were just about twice as good defensively, twice as good as any other team in the major leagues.
Well, you know, David Peralta got better and better. Yasmani was nothing to sneeze at in the outfield. I mean, he made some good defensive plays.
More athletic than you think.
We've already talked about Pollock and Ciardi. Goldie goes without saying anything else. He's one of the best, if not the best, defending first baseman in baseball. Third base was adequately handled by Lamb. Yasmani even played well there. Drury played well there. And then you got Ahmed and Owings up the middle at short and second. Both gold glove caliber type players. So you can see where the Diamondbacks excelled. And don't forget the catcher and the pitcher that also contributed. Jeremy Hellickson, who's no longer here, a good defender. Patrick Corbin, a good defender. Castillo. It's just a good defensive ball club. They positioned themselves well. They were always in the right spot, it seemed to be, at the right time. Not too many times did we see an outfielder overthrow an infielder or make a bad throw to a wrong base.
A lot of improvement in that area.
Right. Yeah, so it was a fun ball club to watch defensively. And Tony La Russa said it when he came in, the more runs you save defensively, that's the less runs you have to score to win a baseball game. Couldn't have said any better.
And it's run production versus run prevention. They each count equally at the end of the game, right?
Yep.
So that's it for, let's do this again, S2EP1T26.
By the way, you mentioned Kiermaier. Did he win the gold glove or did Pilar win the gold glove?
No, Kiermaier won the gold glove.
Okay, I was going to say. Yeah, he should have.
Pilar was outstanding, but, I mean, 42.
Yeah.
And the next closest guy is 29.
Yeah.
That's how good he was.
What's our next set?
Our next set?
Yeah, SET.
Oh, that will be S2E2.
27.
Boy, this is. I hope the uniform unveiling goes better than this tonight. I'm excited to see the whole fashion show here. It's going to be cool. Some business here to take care of. I want to make fans aware of all this stuff, guys. Of course, you can follow the Diamondbacks Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the whole thing. Don't forget, D-backs have already launched 10-game mini plans. You can already buy a 10-game mini plan.
Yankees come in, right?
The Yankees are here.
Yep.
And if you get the 10-game mini plan, that gives you first chance to get tickets for opening day, first chance to get tickets for the Yankee series.
Aren't the Astros in again this year? Or aren't we doing a home-home with them?
I believe we are. Yes.
Yeah. We play the AL Houston, East this year, but for some reason we always play the Astros.
We will always rotate between the Rangers and the
Astros.
Opening weekend here, we open up against the Rockies, but opening weekend is the Cubs.
Yeah,
so
we'll get Arrieta.
Yeah, so you will get first crack at tickets for all those games if you get the 10-game mini plan. And you can pick any 10 games. This is a great idea. You can pick any 10 games all season long. Prices start at only $140. Diamondbacks offer all kinds of ticket packages, the 28-game plan. You can go a half season. You can go full season. All ticket packages, including that 10-game mini plan, can be purchased at dbacks.com/tickets, or you can get on the phone and go old school, 602-462-4600. As they say, operators standing by.
That's 602-462-4600.
Is that your old radio voice you used to do back in the day?
Put the hand up.
Cup your ear like that?
Tom Brenneman still does that.
Boy, oh boy.
Moses. Don't forget, D-backs open 2016 here at Chase Field. Another home opener. This is my fourth year. I've had a home opener every
year. 4 years already?
This will be 2016.
Yeah, you know, the Diamondbacks seem to open at home and close at home every year.
Yeah, it's been a good run.
I'm kind of concerned that that's going to eventually come to an
end. I can't remember the last time we opened on the road.
Yeah.
We've had a nice run that way.
It might have been 2001.
It will be April 4th here at Chase Field against the Rockies. D-backs also have 8 weekend series matchups over the course of the year against the NL West. You're going to get tickets for a bunch of holiday games. Memorial Day is a home game. 4th of July with the fireworks and the whole thing. That's a home game. I didn't want to bog us down.
Ah, that's all right.
I'll look at him jumping on his phone.
Keep talking.
All right, I'll just keep rambling on as I often do. Spring training schedule. Don't forget about that. March 1st, Salt River Field to Talking Stick against University of Arizona, Chip Hale's alma mater. That'll be a big game for Chip. Take on U of A.
July 4th, the Padres.
And their new uniforms.
Andy Green and Company.
They just unveiled their new uniforms. They still can't get it right.
Aren't they doing Navy?
First of all, they screwed up the one uniform that worked was that cool camouflage one they wore on Sundays. They did a blue version of that. They now look like fighting blueberries.
Because they're rotating between the services.
Yeah.
Is that what they're doing?
Yes,
the Navy.
It's a blue camouflage with blue lettering. And then they did San Diego Chargers colors with a yellow. Yeah. And then they have a brown that they're going to wear on Fridays, I guess. So
the old brown?
Yeah, they're excited about that.
Oh, right.
A newer version of the old brown.
And they hinted that they may bring that back.
And that campaign, Tyler Kepner at the New York Times, other people on the Twitter have been saying bring back the brown for years. Thought they might go all in.
They need to bring back Gene Richards.
Enzo Hernandez.
Enzo Hernandez.
Nate Colbert.
Yeah.
Kirby.
Speaking of snazzy new uniforms, don't forget to tell people to get the new stuff, the new gear.
Now, the new gear, I'm told, will be available for VIPs who are at the event tonight on Thursday. The team store, hopefully this is posted, Leo, by Friday. The team store with all the new stuff opens Friday here at the ballpark. Ending, I'm sure you can get it online, too.
Yes.
But you got to get it just in time for Christmas. We're doing this.
Absolutely.
So you need the new stuff. Excellent point
and
by
Hanukkah.
You. That's well produced.
That's right.
Spring training March 1st against U of A. Cactus League opens up March 2nd against the Rockies at Salt River. Cactus League schedule's interesting. We finish up with a two-game set against the World Series champs, the Royals, right here at Chase Field. That's April 1st and 2nd.
Yeah, against all their minor league players on that.
Yeah, you'll get a look just to get a sense. It's a 36-game spring training schedule, 19 home games, 3 road games where you're the road team at Salt River, and the 2 games here against the Royals at Chase Field. Tickets for all games at Salt River Field to Talking Stick go from $11 to $37. You can get a D-back spring ticket plan, all the games. Season ticket plans for spring training go on sale December 18th, so that's only a couple of weeks away. Individual spring game tickets go on sale January 9th. And you can get those at the D-backs ticket office here at Chase Field or dbacks.com/tickets. That does it, boys, for this episode 26 or S2E1T26.
Quick question for both of you guys. Will the Diamondbacks make a deal during the winter meetings?
Yes.
I mean, not a minor thing. will they make a deal that impacts the starting rotation? Either free agent signing or trade?
During the winter meetings.
Next week.
You know, the last couple of years, everybody got their business done
before
the winter meetings.
Remember last year at this time, we were talking about tons of trades already.
For the most part, that has not happened this year, and Tony mentioned that too.
I think that's because everybody was waiting to see what Price and Greinke did.
And if you can get Greinke done by the time,
Monday. They will.
Seems like they will. Then the prices are, in a sense, fixed. Then.
Right.
Samardzija is walking around telling people he's got $100 million from somebody. Yeah. And they're trying to see if they can get more. He might, too, because he's a great plan B for the teams that didn't get
We're
Price
stretching
or
this out further. Yes or no? What do you think, Leo?
I'm going to say no. Soon after, though.
Yeah. How about you? I'm going to agree with Leo. I think the groundwork will be set, but I think a major deal may come down afterwards, sometime in January.
You know what I think will slow down the Diamondback process is Maeda. They have followed him. They've been on Maeda big time for a couple of years now, not just this offseason. It's been a couple of years they've had their eye on him. So that
and they signed Pitch, as Tony mentioned to us, you know, when they were over there.
So does that mean your answer is no?
My answer is the long version is no. I think it'll get a little bit slowed down because they want to see where Maeda is. But I do think they will get two pitchers.
So we got you down for a no.
Put me down for a no.
Okay.
See, if you'd done this before, we could have saved a half hour off the show. I could have just cut right to the chase.
There's
the
still time to save a half hour off the show.
All right. We want to thank Tony La Russa and Steve Gilbert. That does it for this episode. Follow us on the Twitter at D-backs Podcast. By the way, the podcast, did you note, on the Twitter has a new logo too.
It does.
I don't want to overlook that. We've incorporated the new lettering on the uniform.
You just can't let it go, can you?
There's a lot of stuff to get in here, Gub. It's been 2 months.
It's always hard to say goodbye.
It always is. D-backs Podcast brought to you by...
Bye-bye.
Beverages by Hoffman, by Martin Paints, Martin Paints at Anches Paints, and Matzahs by Streitz. For the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor Greg Schulte,
hey.
And the Kingslayer, Leo Bad News Gil Martin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Steve Berthiaume. Thanks for listening to this episode 26, and we will talk to you again right after the winter meetings, we hope, here on D-backs Podcast. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.